Welcome to the 15th episode of the It's Been Said podcast. I'm your host, SAI Executive Director Lisa Ramey. Each show is dedicated to conversations on leadership as we further SAI's mission to support, encourage, and develop Iowa's educational leaders and learners. We're excited this month to welcome Dr. Maria Lance, Director of Curriculum and Instruction in the Ottumwa Community School District. Dr. Lance was a presenter at our SAI 2023 annual conference on the topic of social emotional learning. She will share insights on how to propel social and emotional work forward in your district or school. So Maria, thank you so much for being willing to be on our podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Do you want to share, before we get into the meat of social emotional learning, do you want to share a little bit about you, yourself, background?
I'd love to. Yeah. So Dr. Maria Lance, newly Dr. Maria Lance as of this late summer. And I am the Director of Curriculum and Instruction in the Ottumwa Community School District. This is my second year in this position. Previous to that, I worked in the Des Moines Public Schools as a teacher and administrator. And I also do work around the state with social and emotional learning, which is what my doctoral research was about, was how to implement a framework for social and emotional learning that is sustainable in a school district.
Yeah. And again, congratulations on completing your doctorate.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a task for sure. And it feels good when you can say, I'm done.
It feels really good.
All right. Well, we'll jump in with our first question. So collaboration, as you know, is crucial in education. So how can schools and districts create a culture that values and prioritizes social and emotional learning as an integral part of the educational experience?
So to give some context to kind of how social emotional learning has played out, not just in Iowa, but school districts around the country, is that we knew there was a need for social emotional learning with students. I would say over the last decade, we've seen behavior increase, the need for mental health support and resources increase. And we know that punitive discipline doesn't work very well, and that we need to teach kids a set of skills or competencies to help them grow and be successful. And what has happened in districts is that they know they have a need, and they tend to just go and adopt a curriculum. There's several of them out there. And then they ask teachers to implement this curriculum with very little training or background information and very little collaborative time. And so when you think about that, collaboration is crucial in education. Having teams wrapped around what social emotional learning truly is, I think, is the first factor. There's a lot of misinformation out there about social and emotional learning. And I think the first step of any school or any district is to bring together a group of stakeholders, whether that is teachers and staff, families and caregivers, and build a background of what is social emotional learning and what is not social emotional learning, and then be transparent around that, and then collaborate over how to implement, whether it's a curriculum or whether it's different lessons or strategies in that social emotional learning across the school or district. And so the districts I've worked with bring teams. So they have what we call SEL lead teams from their different buildings together to work collaboratively across the district and set goals and then measure their progress towards those goals. And so it's essential, because otherwise any work gets done haphazardly and then doesn't sustain itself very well.
Yeah. You mentioned there, Maria, the importance of parents and or caregivers, right? So what role do they play in supporting and sustaining SEL efforts in schools? And then how can they be more engaged in that process?
I'm a big believer that parents and caregivers are partners in a student's educational experience. And I think we see that parents are asking for that partnership in the education of their child. And so I really think that schools and districts have an obligation to families to be transparent about the curriculum or what they're educating kids on. And I think the more that our families truly know, again, what is social and emotional learning, the less fear will be around it. Again, we've seen a lot of fear-driven misinformation around social and emotional learning. But when you talk to families and you say, hey, I just really want to work with your kids on identifying feelings or managing their emotions or making responsible decisions or being a good team player, it's a different message, and families are all on board. But I think it is, families want to get involved and want to be a part of that, but it's on the school to communicate that well with families to ensure that they are partners in this work. Some of the things that I've done in my previous buildings or in the districts that I've worked with is doing social emotional learning nights or SEL nights with families. And we would go through a competency, so self-awareness or self-management. And we would engage in different activities that could be applied at home and at school. And I think it's important for families to know, just like it is in schools, that this is adult work and work that we do with kids, because all of us are continually growing in those social emotional learning competencies.
Yeah, you're so right that we as adults have to be able to self-manage and be self-aware, as well as help our kids understand those different competencies. Yeah, so true.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Maria, how do, you know, you mentioned the stakeholders, bringing stakeholders together. How do you ensure then the success and continuity of the SEL practices at Ottumwa?
So this is multiple parts. I think the biggest thing and the most important thing that often goes kind of skipped in SEL implementation is adult practice and adults doing the work alongside of or ahead of students. And so the research around social emotional learning would tell you that adults should be engaged in that competency work prior to students. I don't think that's the reality of most schools where we have such high needs. And so I propose that adults do that work alongside of kids. And so let's just say a school in Ottumwa, which we have, is focused on, we're all going to engage in some self-awareness work. We're going to engage in doing better about identifying our feelings and managing those feelings. Then both the adults and the students are doing that work simultaneously, and we can find different ways to measure the impact of that work. Surveys, prior to this school year, I would have said surveys are a great way for students to self-assess or adults to self-assess on where they are in those competencies so that you can see the measure of your work over time. But really looking, I think, at other types of data that we're seeing. Are there fewer disruptions in the building? Are we having less office referrals? Are students coming to school more frequently? Attendance data are ways to mark progress of a strong culture and climate that's built around SEL.
So what are some of those key components? You know, I hear you talking about different components of the program. So what are those key components of a sustainable SEL program? And then how can districts effectively implement those components?
So I would say there's a few different factors that I look for, but I'd say the two big ones for any district to really focus on would be that adults are engaging alongside of students. So adult social emotional learning. And then also you think about our workplace right now and burnout rates and stress, and this work is so crucial to help alleviate that. So adult social emotional learning is one of those key components. And the second key component that I would stress for every single district hoping to have a sustainable implementation of SEL is that it is embedded, social emotional learning is embedded into everything that they do. So what I mean by that is often SEL is the standalone time, either in a schedule or in a student's day. So this is, whether it's advisory or at the beginning or start of the day, we're going to do this lesson, but it has to be interconnected into the rest of their academic day. So I'll just keep on the identifying feelings. So if I'm focused on that with my second graders, not only are we doing that in our standalone lesson, but we're also incorporating that into math. So when we get frustrated learning this new math method, we also can take that as an opportunity to identify feelings. Okay, so where are we at here? And so that's when we really make social emotional learning come to life. And same with our, again, that adult piece, doing that work in professional development, having adults do different self-regulation or mindfulness activities, but being intentional about connecting that why and how it gets us in a headspace to learn. Again, adult SEL alongside of or ahead of students, one of those crucial components, and the other one is embedding or interconnecting SEL and not letting it be a standalone. Those are the two things I would ask every district to do as they engage in this work.
Yeah, Maria, you had mentioned a couple times about adults either doing the work either ahead of or alongside. And so I was going to ask you, and you kind of alluded to it in your last answer, you know, what does that look like for a district? Do they set aside professional learning time? How do they embed that for that learning for adults?
So it could be, that's a great question. So both and. And so in my doctoral work, that was a big part of our process in this action research, was that whatever our focus was for students or adults, we're also doing that. And they did use professional development time in that district. And it was very intentional. And they had adults self-assess where they started in that competency and where they ended in that competency. And so we have to be intentional about it. And so if it's a priority, we have to embed that. And I think we have to also understand that although we are adults, most of us didn't get raised in a system that prioritized social and emotional learning. And so we aren't used to a lot of the different actions we ask kids to do. I think I get more groans in a meeting of adults, college educated adults, when we talk about we're going to do some deep breathing. And how that affects the frontal lobe and your thinking brain than if I do a group of students. And so really making sure that it is embedded and there's an understanding of the why is so crucial to successful implementation.
Yeah, thank you for expanding on that. I appreciate that. So, and maybe this connects to our next question, right? So could you provide some of those examples of successful programs or initiatives that have had a lasting impact on either staff or students?
So I'm just going to spotlight the Algona Community School District. That's where my doctoral research was conducted in. And they took this, what we call a depth approach instead of a breadth approach, where they looked at a competency and picked a skill set within that competency. And everyone engaged in that, whether it was staff professional learning and then students doing the work. They also communicated their information out to families. And so they spent the first 9 weeks of last school year on communication. That was the first skill that they picked. And so their superintendents and building or district leadership team started the school year by talking about how as adults we communicate with one another, with students, what does effective communication look like? And they self-rated. Teachers in elementary school in that district worked on being a strong communicator with partners or teams, and they worked on that in their circle time, and how good communicators don't disrupt learning, how they support each other. And they measured things like interruptions in circle to make sure that that was effective. And the results from that district are just pretty outstanding to see not only growth in their conditions for learning data, but all of those little measurements we took, whether it was communication or self-regulation, those different things that we focused on throughout the year, the growth from just the beginning of the quarter to the end of the quarter. And again, it's because they went all in, and everyone from preschool to 12th grade and every staff member was doing the same thing, obviously to their age band or grade level. But that approach of going deep and not trying to cover a whole bunch of things, but getting really good at a few things, worked really well there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. When you say everyone, you know, working in school systems, it's hard to get everyone on board.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about that district too, is when they say everyone, they mean everyone. So I just had a follow-up session there a few weeks ago where we worked with the custodial staff and bus drivers and paraprofessionals, and to get them more caught up on restorative practices specifically. But they, when they mean everyone, they mean every single person that is integrated into the school system is engaged in this learning, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Because think how that, you know, penetrates for their culture across their entire system. When you think about the bus driver, sometimes is the first person to see students. And so if he or she has those, that lens as well. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, it has been really fun. And they learned things about themselves in that process too. And so we think about that idea of communication within that social awareness competency and relationship skills. Like, for instance, you and I communicating right now, but then they realized that it was so much more. Like, what is their communication through social media? What is, like, how does it wrap around to their communication through their apps? And so they started thinking much more broadly about that skill and how it plays out in different ways, which I didn't anticipate.
Yeah, that's a great example. Thank you for sharing that. So what are some best practices around measuring? So you mentioned, you know, looking at different ways to measure the impact of social emotional learning initiatives, and then how then you can take that data to demonstrate the effectiveness to the different stakeholder groups, to the community, teachers, caregivers, et cetera. Mm-hmm.
So the research would tell you that best practices around measuring are students self-assessing, especially grades three and up, and that students have a chance to self-reflect over where they feel they are in terms of those social emotional learning competencies, and whether you call them that or not, that they're doing the reflecting, that it's not an adult saying you fall here in these competencies, that it's really them having that reflective mindset in the work. Our recent legislation has made that a little bit more difficult, but as we're learning in SMO right now, we went to do our student surveys and sent out our letters for consent for families. And we just got, I think maybe because it was October and trying to do that, we just didn't have a high turnout, but we plan on being that, making that part of registration, because we know that student being able to self-reflect over where they are in these competencies is just helps them be a better learner and to help them understand themselves. And so really the most important thing we can do is have that self-reflection piece and have students see their progress over time on how they've looked at that. And then you look at Hattie's research. And we know that, again, being able to know the target, know the end goal, and reflect on my progress over time is one of those best practices there too. So it goes right alongside that.
Yeah. Yeah, that self-reflection, even for adults, right, is so powerful.
It is. And we're often harder on ourselves than others are on us.
Yeah, so true. So true. So you've probably experienced in your educational career that initiatives sometimes lose momentum. And so how can schools and districts avoid this pitfall, if you would call it that, and ensure that SEL efforts remain a top priority?
So in the embedded into everything we do, the priority has to become part of who you are in your culture as your organization. And so SEL can't be an add-on. It can't be an extra thing on the plate. It has to be interconnected into all pieces of your organizational culture. And that is, I think, one of the best things that came from my work with Algona and my exit interview with their superintendent. He said, this is who we are. This is what we do. This is how we're onboarding staff. And so it's a non-negotiable that in that school district, these are the standards that they're held, that they are, you will engage in your own continuous learning around SEL. You will work with kids in these areas. And it's just, that's just who they are, you know? And we don't see a lot of sustainability in our field over time with any initiatives, let alone social emotional learning, But when you look at the work of implementation science, they talk about doubling down in that. And so year two, year three, you're doubling down in that work. So how are we going even deeper into that same initiative from year one, again, whether it's social emotional learning or something else? And what are our checkpoints and measurements for progress over time? And how do we know we've hit our goal? And so it's that continuous learning framework, but making it a part of your identity is really crucial to keeping something alive.
Yeah. You know, when you said onboarding, it makes me think, you know, oftentimes we think schools don't think about, as you're bringing new staff in, how to thoughtfully think through how to bring them up to speed on where you're at on whatever that initiative may be. And so being really intentional for all staff, those new staff hired, and then that doubling down piece makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. And that's the other work. So with Algona, we knew that we couldn't onboard their new teachers this fall with, okay, and here's all these instructional pieces and curriculum, and here's where the bathroom is and how to work the copy machine. And here's who we are as a district. But we wanted to create a day just for, and we're going to do, we actually thought of this for this upcoming year, but just for new staff on those district goals and the how they get there through social emotional learning and restorative practices, and for them to engage in that work as a standalone prior to any of that technical getting ready for the start of the school year stuff that we know becomes very overwhelming for new staff.
Yeah. You know, you were mentioning new staff in the beginning of the year, but if you think about all staff, right, throughout the year, there's lots of things always coming at them. It seems like more and more all the time. So in that day-to-day kind of craziness of school life, how can educators find time and resources really to prioritize SEL learning without it kind of getting lost in all of the other things that they're required to do?
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the beautiful things about the Iowa SEL competencies is that they've really laid out what I might say is like learning targets over those competencies within the band of what it means to kind of be, whether it's socially aware or self-aware in that grade level. And so I have always encouraged teachers to literally write a learning target over whatever they're working on, so that they can reference that back throughout the academic day, because that's really what makes and keeps SEL going, is that, again, it's not that standalone. And that's, and I think of social emotional learning skills as just good human skills. And when staff is continually referring to that, just like you would any learning target, like you're constantly bringing that back, then it doesn't get lost. It doesn't become this other thing. And it really does make it easy to connect the academic learning and standards and targets to the social emotional ones. So goal setting, for instance, is a big part of social emotional learning. And so if you could be setting academic goals, you can be setting SEL goals. You can be constantly referring to those as you're teaching a lesson. What goal did you set for how many times you would participate? What goal did you set for this literacy, your reading goal, or whatever it might be, you know? And so it really is just, it's because it's making it a habit that is what makes it not get lost.
Mm-hmm. You know, earlier in our call, Maria, you mentioned talking about what SEL is and what SEL isn't. And so, as you know, and may have experienced, I don't know, there's at times some skepticism around what SEL is, what schools are really doing when they say they're doing social emotional learning. So how can administrators, educators overcome that resistance or that skepticism?
I really think the transparency is crucial to overcoming skepticism. I know that some different school districts around the state have been told that might be a good idea to change the name. Don't call it social emotional learning, call it 21st century skills, call it this, call it that. And I think that's fine. But again, I think that starts to kind of stoke the fears of flame in families. Well, they're covering it up. They're calling it this other thing, you know, when if we just if we go over those five competencies, self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, relationship skills, and responsible decision-making, and if we just go over them with families, whether it's at a back to school night or conferences or an open house, I really think you would alleviate so much of that fear that comes with, again, the misinformation that has come out around SEL. And I think we build bigger and better connections with our families and caregivers, and we can do better work for our students when we, you know, we just share, like, here's what we're doing. I think that oversharing is the key there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Just being open and upfront, right? Here's
exactly.
What it is. Yeah. And being willing to have those conversations when they come up.
Yeah, I think, and that's the other thing too, I've run into in my administrative career a couple times where families do have really good questions and wonder, how does this align with my beliefs or my family's beliefs? And it's just having those conversations. And there's not been a time that I can think of where it's ended up with a parent or caregiver being upset or mad or fooling their student or not. It's when we don't have those conversations that those unfortunate outcomes tend to occur.
Yeah. So true. So true. So what, do you have any specific tools or resources or professional development opportunities that you would recommend for educators and or administrators who are looking to enhance SEL in their either building or district?
I have lots of tools. During the pandemic, I actually created like a virtual Google Classroom for adults on the different competencies that I'd be happy to share out with you. But I've worked actually with my counselors in Ottumwa, and we have taken those competencies and created a number of resources to go alongside of those for any educator to use. And then we've also created this sort of pathway where it says, what does it look like when adults are engaged in this, and what does it look like when students are actively engaged in these competencies? So what are things you'll see? What are things that you'll hear? And that's been really helpful for our educators here in Ottumwa, because they have an easy reference point. Because again, our district, like many districts previous, had adopted a curriculum, but again, that didn't show the why. Like, why is this important? How does it help me build better learners, not just in myself, but in students? And yeah, so I have all of those kind of resources available that I can make for you and your team.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm. And our final question, Maria, is what advice would you give to your fellow colleagues who might be feeling a little bit overwhelmed when it comes to implementing and maintaining a strong SEL practice in their educational environment?
Yes. So I would say start with yourself. It's SEL work. So social emotional learning work is always mirror work first, as opposed to window work. And so starting to dig into those five competencies I just mentioned and self-reflecting is this, I think, the start of the foundation. And so I think that will also help that sort of feeling of overwhelm with more and more things coming at us. Do we have a strong foundation in who we are, our identity, our core values, our emotions? Do we know how to reflect that onto others? Do I have strong communication skills, and am I a good teammate to others? Like, all of those things fall within those SEL competencies. So my advice to my colleagues would be to do your inner work first, and then to bring adults into that mix and start growing the SEL competencies in both adults and students in your district after that. Because again, modeling that is so crucial in this work.
Yeah, thank you. Maria, we were so fortunate to have you have a session at conference in August. And thank you for being willing to follow up so those who weren't able to attend your conference session can listen to the podcast. And then I know, just because I know you, if anybody wants to reach out, you'd probably be willing to answer that email or phone call so that they could learn more from you specifically.
I'd be happy to help.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time today.
Join us for our next episode, where I'll be hosting Dave Dott, the Government Relations Director at SAI. Dave will share valuable insights and strategies for effective advocacy, crucial not just during the legislative session, but all year round. Don't miss out on learning how to elevate your advocacy efforts.